Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
What do we got for you on the Chuck Oliver Show? Well, we got college football. You know that. Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday live from Harris, Cherokee, North Carolina. Already had a big hour one. Had our buddy Drew DeArmond on from 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville. Also, my good buddy Joe Hamilton from Low T Nation, late of Georgia Tech, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, all of that stuff. Talked a little spring ball and transferring and others. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Matt Stinchcomb, former All-American at Georgia, first-round draft pick of the Raiders, Super Bowl participant himself, and now SEC Network color analyst extraordinaire. Bottom of the hour, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. He will be with us as we will, I promise you, we'll do a flyover the entire SEC. Do y'all know what the Skyriders were back in SEC verbiage? If we go back, like, at this point, close to 25 years, you know what the Skyriders were?
I know.
There were, Dan knows. You get the helmet sticker, Dan. Little microphone on the back of your helmet. Skyriders, it was way back in the day, like early to mid-90s, I think. Tony Barnhart did this. They would rent a plane, fly around all the campuses, and the Skyriders would, they would basically put on their own mini version of SEC Media Days, but travel together to split the cost, go around all these campuses. And so they would get their July and August interviews. Someone caught on that there was probably a better way to do that. Why don't we bring everybody together? And so, again, that was way back in the day. But we will do a flyover verbiage-wise, not in an airplane or anything, with Connor O'Gara. That's the bottom of the hour. But right now I'm going to get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm Pain Relief Cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, Tennessee pauses team activities due to COVID-19. Tennessee football has paused all of their activities. Multiple positive COVID-19 tests among both players and staff. Now, this was announced by the university yesterday. It is not sources. It's not someone close to the situation. It's none of that. But when I say they paused all activities, you know, they may have 2 or 10 or 30 either positive test or contact tracing or whatever. It's March 18th. By my database, because I went through either trying to find a conference listing or individual schools that I thought I needed to know about. Certainly, here are all the ACC first spring practice and first and spring game dates. SEC, first spring practice, spring game dates. Got all of them. Best I could. I've got Tennessee slated to start March 23rd with a spring game April 24th. I am wondering if any team that has a pause in activities is just going to pull the plug on that spring game. The SEC Network, in this case, would still want inventory. I don't know if it'll happen on April 24th, but there's a good chance that if you're pushing back the start of spring practice and you already condensed it. I mean, like you have some schools taking 6-7 weeks to get to their 15 practices and then, you know, or 14 in a game. Tennessee was going to do it in a month. They were supposed to start, again, by the number I got, March 23rd. That's less than a week. They were going to wrap up April 24th. So I don't know if all that's variable, but there was no confirmation on the number of positive tests or how it's going to impact the practice schedule. I'm just telling you that's what I expect. I don't believe Tennessee will open. Again, I had it as 23rd, but that's all over the place. And real quick, I want to flash back to last year because I do this every year. I have these different exercises I go through, and there are places where you can just find all of it, but it kind of forces you to do your homework and such. And so I come up with my database of every team, ACC, SEC, and then the other, you know, 20 or so programs that I really wanted to pay attention to for whatever their stories were last spring. So I create this database, and I start bringing it up around the middle of or beginning, middle of March. I'm like, all right, well, we're going to move that date. All right, well, we're going to delete that one, are we? Yeah, okay, I'm going to just go ahead and move this all to the trash bin. And so I just moved the whole document over there after a couple of weeks because I knew how it was going. When we started getting the cancellations of media days, I was like, yeah, we know how this is going. Same sort of thing. I just think Tennessee's going to have to push this back, and it would not surprise me if the Vols or any other program decides, hey, weren't going to have the full spring game experience anyway, so we're just not going to do it. Again, that's just me supposing. Final headline I'm going to talk about as a headline as such. Ex-LSU president Alexander on probation over Les Miles case. He's at Oregon State now. And the time-tested response of, hey, all those people are gone now. Well, we still want to yell at LSU because all this stuff happened at LSU. And even though the coach is gone, the AD's gone, the president's gone, everybody's gone, all the students, players, everybody's gone from 2013. Everybody. It's still an LSU problem. That is not the environment today. The environment is, okay, you're gone. Where are you? Because you're going to face consequences there too. And the Oregon State Board of Trustees, they voted 12-2 on Wednesday to place the university president on probation through June 1. The board heard, quote, extensive public comments, reviewed written communication. You know what the extensive public comments are? I cannot believe we have someone with this in his past representing our extensive public commentary. And so he is on probation. Consider yourself up to date. There's one more headline, but I want to talk a little bit more about it, and I'll do that later in the show. All right, so we will take a quick break and come back with more of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Well, UGA had a pro day yesterday, and Eric Stokes runs really fast. I kind of already knew that, but then when you throw a stopwatch on it, it kind of jumps off the page at you. I want to welcome on now a man who I believe was there from the SEC Network and ESPN and all kinds of things. It is our good friend Matt Stinchcomb. Matt, how are you, brother?
Man, I'm doing so great, Chuck. How are you doing, man?
I'm pretty good today. I want to ask you about Eric Stokes and just in general, not necessarily him, but the situation. We see a kid with a great 40, and we're like, woo, he's going to be a first-round draft pick or whatever. Yeah, you want to be fast, but talk about what – that's fans. That's, you know, some of us in the media who didn't play. What about an NFL scout? He's looking at a 4.28 or a 4.33. There's no difference in those, is there?
I don't think so. I mean, what these guys really care about is game speed, right? Because you can look great running in a straight line, but, you know, other than, you know, a go route, you're not going to see that a whole lot. And, you know, it's whether or not these guys are game fast and can they change direction? Can they cover? Can they play a ball in the air? All those other things. But it doesn't hurt. to run a 4-2-8 or a 4-3-3. And if I had to pick between the two, I would choose the 4-2-8. But I do think that, is it a decision maker or a decision breaker? No, not necessarily. Might be a tiebreaker, though. If you're looking at another guy that you think's got a similar skill set and you're going, you know, if I have to go a direction between these two guys, I'll just go with the guy that's faster.
You know, I'm trying to think back, and I think Janoris Jenkins, where he landed when he exited UF was North Alabama, I think. But I remember the story, and then there's a bunch like this, but the story of, hey, Janoris Jenkins is going to work out at Florida's Pro Day. There used to be some sort of, like, extra attention about, oh, the troublemaker or the dismiss kid or whatever, he's back. I don't think that there's that sort of – I think it's just, hey, let's evaluate some ball players now. You have any opinion on that?
As far as what, guys that were at programs and coming back and doing their pro day at their
Yeah, it's not even a thing. It's not even a story anymore. It's like, tell me the bench press. Tell me what he looked like running routes.
Yeah. Well, I don't think from an NFL perspective, I think those guys are going, they'll do their own character evaluations and all that other stuff. But as far as like returning for pro days and that sort of thing, you know, I know that it was kind of passed around, I want to say, Tuesday maybe, that everyone was speculating that Jamie Newman was going to work out at Georgia. I don't know that that would have been well received given the circumstances, but according to Georgia officials and everyone else, they said, look, we've always welcomed the guy back. He chose to go to Wake Forest. Kind of makes sense. I get it. There weren't a lot of receivers even available to be catching passes. It was Trey McKitty and Tyler Simmons really from a season ago that were available from Georgia's side anyway. So it makes more sense. For Jamie Newman to be at Wake Forest for a variety of reasons. But you see these guys come back, and they want to go where the most pro scouts and the most NFL eyeballs are going to be, and sometimes it makes sense to go back to their former school, especially if it's a more prominent one.
Continuing with Matt Stinchcomb from SEC Network, I want to ask about a position you know a little bit about, offensive linemen, specifically tackles with a lot of these guys. But you did not transfer. You showed up, made good grades, graduated onto the NFL. A guy like Mason Halter, do you remember him? From Fordham, he transferred to Florida about 6-7 years ago and started at right tackle. Tyler Catalina from, I think, Rhode Island, transfers to Georgia. Auburn's had a kid from Harvard and one from Jack State. I used to look at that and think, oh, there's no way he can't adjust to the SEC speed. And, I mean, they didn't turn into first-round draft picks, but talk about the big difference for a kid who played at Fordham or Harvard or something. Then you drop him into the SEC wood chipper. I mean, it ain't easy, but there's a growing list of guys who had made that work. It's a huge jump in competition, though.
Agreed, and I do think, though, part of it is offensive line is one of the most difficult positions to recruit because you got to project a guy that might be 260 pounds, and a lot of these programs that are developmental programs, and by that I mean like a Kentucky. Kentucky's not going to recruit a lot of finished products out of high school. They're not going to get a ton of five stars, the guys that already look, walk, and talk the part. It's guys that are going to grow into it, they hope, into a role to where they're, you know, special players like a Bud Dupree and others. So they're guys that I think end up at schools that maybe they aren't done growing, or maybe they were overlooked, or maybe they were injured, or maybe they wrestled their first 2 years and then they just played football their last 2 years, whatever it is. And, you know, they outgrow the competition at that level and they realize, hey, man, I could probably actually – you know, I could probably make the field. I could certainly make the team. I think I could get on the field at a Power 5 program, even one where the line of scrimmage is emphasized, like at the Southeastern Conference. That happens, and I think it does often happen. It's interesting that it seems to happen for offensive line guys. And, you know, some of these guys, it just takes time for them to eat their way into the size that it takes to actually be able to be competitive at that level. It's happened. It's happened a time or two. And it's worked out for some guys in big ways.
And I agree with that. I mean, footwork, hand placement, leverage, all of that stuff, it translates whether it's the Ivy League or, you know, Pac-12, whatever. It's still the same technique, and you're right. Well, 330 and, you know, 38 reps is different than, you know, 320 reps. But is there a common thread? You know, you're talking about the evaluation. If you're looking at either a high school senior or maybe a guy who had to go to JUCO for whatever reason or a guy in the transfer portal, is there a thread you look through that is maybe the secret sauce to there's at least a better chance it turns out good for this offensive lineman?
I don't know. I think part of it's position. Although, you know, Catalina was a tackle. I think the kid that transferred to Auburn was, he was a center, right, from Jack State?
Yeah, Casey Dunn, yeah.
You know, we've seen a couple. You know, LSU seems like a very odd landing spot, but nonetheless, one for former Harvard players. One was the Hatch kid at quarterback, and then their kid at center this past year is a Harvard kid. You know, it seems like it'd make more sense in the interior line, only because there's a little bit more help in there, and you know, especially at center, where a little bit more of a cerebral position to where you know you might not have the physical traits, but it doesn't matter because you're heady enough to where it makes sense to get you out there on the field. But you know, I don't know that there's a position or even a specific circumstance where it makes the most sense. You see some guys, you know, that were tight ends, and they just kind of grow out of being a tight end. It's the Adam Meadows. It's the Clint Bowlings. It's the Matt Lepsis. The list is long and pretty distinguished of guys that, you know, played tight end and ate their way into being an offensive line guy, a tackle oftentimes. Sean Andrews actually did it at the collegiate level and ended up being a perennial Pro Bowler tackle. So yeah, it's possible. And it does happen. I don't think it's overly frequent, but it is kind of interesting that you bring it up, that it seems like the offensive line position lends itself well to these guys that were at lower levels transferring in and being able to play. You know, you don't often see, like, you could say even a Jabril Cox, but my gosh, he's playing at North Dakota State, which is, you know, Alabama wishes it had the level of success that North Dakota State has had at their level. So it's an elite program at a lower tier, if you will, at the FCS level. The fact that Jabril Cox comes over, transfers, starts right away, plays off the ball in the box at LSU and really helps his draft stock shouldn't be that surprising, but it happens more often at offensive line than just about any other position, it seems.
Last thing for you, and I want to ask you, we were talking philosophy there, and that was interesting, but I do want to ask something on field and direct. Who's Georgia's left tackle week one?
I don't know.
That's my answer. I already took that one.
Yeah, maybe Jones. Isn't that the kid's name?
Yeah,
Roderick Jones kid. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to be able to say that Salyer moves inside. I really do like him at guard. And not that he did a bad job at left tackle, and I think that Georgia can win and win big with him at left tackle. I think it's better for him. I think it's better for the Dogs offensively if he's capable of moving inside. I don't know that that will happen. But, you know, I was a fan of Jones coming out of high school. The reps I saw where he was able to get on the field, he looked pretty good, although it was really abbreviated. So it's a total pig and a poke. I don't know, but I'll say Jones because you won't let me say I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, I already got that one, and I was going to go for Amarius Mims as well. We always get just so fascinated with the young kids when they're first in the – oh, he's a five-star. I bet he can start. Matt Stinchcomb, thank you for your time, brother.
All right, man.
All right, Matt Stinchcomb again from SEC Network, ESPN, et cetera. It's always the five-star. Hey, he's a five-star, and look at him. He's 6'6". We tell what Rusty Mansell or Chad Simmons or whomever said, and they do a good job because what they do all day, every day. We declare him a four-star, and then we give his dimensions. We tell what someone's opinion was, fill in the blanks at four stars, and then he's 6'6 and 285. Here's an interesting thing. When you get to, like, go look at a bunch of pro day measurements, you'll see kids that were on college rosters for 3 or 4 years at 6'5", 6'3", and 7'8". You'll see he was 330 pounds. Well, he's either 315 or he's 350. So a lot of coming out of Pro Day, like I said, always appreciate when we're able to get a few minutes with Matt Stinchcomb from the SEC Network.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I don't know of another team in the Southeastern Conference this coming season that I more expect to be improving without any visible signs of it. Sort of that, hey, what's going on with that duck over there just hanging out on the lake? No, you ought to put his feet under the water. I don't know if there's any team in the SEC, maybe in American Power 5 football, where that will be in play as much as Auburn. And part of that is because it is a complete teardown and then rebuild. The town I grew up in is in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And the square in Lawrenceville, it's old town, big courthouse with all those old school, you know, buildings around it and all that, the little shops. Well, there were two of them that were abandoned. And I remember looking at them thinking, man, those things look like the bomb went off inside. Well, then a developer bought it and decided to turn it into something. And while he was tearing it down, it still looked the same. I was like, this doesn't look like progress. It's just a bigger pile. It may look like a bigger pile at times this fall, but I promise you, Brian Harsin and the coaches are doing their job. I want to welcome on now a guy who covers all the SEC and does an outstanding job of it. From Saturday Down South, it's Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm doing really well. You had me there like hook, line, and sinker. I was following along, waiting for the punchline, the entire Auburn story. I'm here with you. I don't know necessarily that it's going to be a year one turnaround in the Brian Harsin era, but I certainly find myself intrigued as to how he is going to perform and what he's done, I think, with his staff so far and the hires that he's made. I think bodes really well. But, yeah, I mean, I think Auburn's a super intriguing team, just a little bit maybe not quite as optimistic about them in year one as you are.
No. What I'm saying is that there's going to be a whole lot of work going on, but I don't think we'll see any real visible signs of it. I think that it's kind of like what I was talking about, that block growing up. There's a teardown involved at first. They're going to have to break down everything about Bo Nix's mechanics. They're going to have to break down all 11 scholarship offensive linemen and see who can play. They're going to have to tear down a whole lot before there's any sort of visible signs of progress. That's kind of the angle I was working at.
The good news is that you don't have to tear down Tank Bigsby. Last I checked, he is still the most appropriately named player in all of college football. And you do get to build an offense around him with Mike Bobo, which I think bodes really well. But you're right. You know, you do have to tear down the mechanics with Bo Nix. And I saw him speaking to the media yesterday, wherein he said something that was probably music to Auburn fans' ears, that he needs to be able to work better in the pocket. Anybody who's watched Bo Nix knows the most frustrating part about his game is that he wants to roll out every single time. And he's making so many of these throws on the move where, you know, ideally you would like a quarterback with his experience level just step up in the pocket. And obviously that's way easier said than done. But at this stage, and when you're a former five-star guy, you don't necessarily get that leniency. So I think there's a lot of people wondering what exactly those mechanics are going to look like with Brian Harsin there, with Mike Bobo there as well. Are they going to be able to turn Bo Nix around? Because I'll be honest, I went on record saying I think Bo Nix has made his last start for Auburn, and I thought that they were going to go to the transfer portal to be able to find their replacement for him. But all signs right now suggest that my take is going to be wrong and that they're going to try and rebuild Bo Nix, but not going to be an easy thing to do.
No, and, you know, like if I just randomly pick, like, the most far-flung coach from Alabama as possible, like Nick Rolovich, okay? Hey, what do you think about coaching against Nick Saban every day of the year? No, thank you. I'm sure everybody in college football has an understanding about what the challenge is. I don't think Brian Harsin really understands what that is, though. He's living it now, and he's going to find out, but it is a challenge. I mean, literally, it doesn't exist anywhere. I don't think in collegiate sports it doesn't exist anywhere.
It's such a unique job. It really is. I don't think there's any job quite like Auburn's in all of college football. And part of that is because of the way that the structure is set up with the people who hold the power in terms of, you know, buyouts and all of that stuff. That element is unique. And just the fact that every single year you're held to that Alabama or Georgia standard. And if you're not necessarily getting the same type of player, then that's a problem. And I saw something, I think it was Josh Vitale who tweeted out that Auburn, in terms of the money he was spending on recruiting, was like a third of what Georgia was spending, which that tells you all you need to know right there. But it is such a pressure-packed job. And for someone that, you know, has spent nearly a quarter century thousands of miles away from it, it's certainly going to be unique. But, you know, Auburn's a very special place, and I've talked to Gene Chizik a lot about it over the years, and it is a place that we'll embrace, but at the same time, you have to understand the dynamics at play to be able to kind of ride with the ebbs and flows. And to Gus Malzahn's credit, did it for 8 years. I mean, he did it for 8 years, and I think we sort of take that for granted because it felt like he was on the hot seat for half of it. But I think Brian Harsin is walking into a unique situation, and it'll be fascinating to see how he handles it.
You had mentioned that you liked some of the coaching hires. Specifically, give your commentary on Bobo and Derek Mason.
Well, I think Bobo, you know, I think Bobo is going to be able to work with what they're going to try to do. And, you know, so many of these coordinators, these coaches, they want to overhaul everything. And I get it. You know, what Mike Leach did at Mississippi State, for example, where Mike Leach went to a place that was not built for the air raid. They didn't even have an offensive line that could block three-man fronts. They were not built to run that offense. It was always going to be, as you say, a tear-down job, and it wasn't going to be built for success in year one. Now, what they are able to do in year one at Auburn is run the football. They should be able to do that at a much higher rate. Even though they do need to find those bodies on the offensive line, you should still be really good at the position with Tank Bigsby, who Pro Football Focus has the number one returning running back in all of college football. So you should be able to have an identity there. What did Mike Bobo do last year with Kevin Harris in South Carolina? Certain Kevin Harris into one of the best running backs in all of college football. And I think that you're able to translate that style and what he was able to do sort of at the end with some of the things that Luke Doty was trying out. I think that bodes well for Bo Nix to an extent. Now, Bo Nix is still going to have to fix the mental aspect of it because we've never really questioned the physical stuff, but you need to be able to get on that mental, you know, that mental level in order to succeed at this level. So I think that Mike Bobo is going to be able to have some success there, but it does depend on that offensive line play improving. It does depend on Bo Nix being able to read defenses and not do what probably has felt so natural to him, and that is roll to his right and try and make a throw on the run or try and move with his legs when, you know, there have to be things that happen within the flow of the offense.
Hop over to Starkville. You mentioned Mike Leach there. We know about the meme and the transfers, and there were some missteps and some issues. And those, you got to include those in the context, but I don't obsess over those. I view him as a guy who just didn't understand the context of where he was living. Big picture, though, do you think it's going to work? And I'm trying to give you as generic a question. Do you think Mike Leach and who he is as a person, not the offense, not the X's and O's, the plays work, I know that. Do you think he's going to wind up meshing? Because it took, I mean, Ole Miss fans and Lane Kiffin, about 15 minutes, and he's meshed.
Yeah, it's a different fit. It's definitely a different fit. And I think Lane having so much more experience in this region of the country helps. I really do think it does. And Lane's lived everywhere. And I mean, at this point, he's someone who moved around a lot as a kid. And I think that kind of helps him to be able to adapt to his surroundings. And that's not to say he's been a perfect fit with every single, you know, demographic that he's been a part of. But I think that was easier for him. Whereas Leach, you know, Leach is set in his ways. And Leach is going to do what Leach has been doing for the last two decades. He was going to come in and he was going to stick to his guns. And even though there were a lot of moments in that season where you say, okay, look, if you can't block these three-man fronts, you should probably run the football with your first-team All-SEC tailback. And there was a bit of a falling out there, and, you know, it depends on which side you listen to as to kind of what played out with all that. But what we know with Leach is that he has been good in year two. And I believe in the year two bump with Mike Leach, because I think once they see the people in Starkville, once they sort of see the fruits of his labor and see that his style can work and it can have success, I think they're going to take to it in a much different way. Now, the question is, what do you view as success for Mike Leach, right? Like, what's working? Because if working is just getting it back to the level that Dan Mullen was at, I think that's very much in the cards. If you're saying working is being a yearly top 10 team, then no, I don't think it's going to work at Mississippi State. I would hope Mississippi State fans aren't expecting that, because in that division, you can't expect that. That's not realistic. But are they in that position where they can occasionally have that one year where everything sort of hits right and they're in the top 15 and all of a sudden they're in a division title race late in the season? I think that can absolutely happen. I think he's going to elevate their floor. But that mindset of how Mississippi State fans are going to treat him, I think we're going to see a big change in that in year two once we see this offense take off a little bit.
One final question for you, and it's about Jimbo and the Aggies. If you talk about, you know, a program, oh, they got just one hurdle to clear, one last step. There is no one last step in college football. Like, yeah, we got to beat Bama now. How do you get better? How do you more likely beat Bama losing your 3.5-year starting quarterback?
You return 11 of 12 guys who caught a pass last year. That certainly helps. Which the Aggies are loaded at the pass catcher positions, and they are loaded in that backfield. You could make a case that Isaiah Spiller, Devon Achane, and Anaya Smith is the best backfield in college football, top to bottom. It's that good. Georgia fans might disagree with that, but I think there's at least a case to be made given the fact that Spiller's already had those 2,000-yard seasons. But this is a team that just intrigues me so much, because Haynes King is going to be the starter there most likely, and he can scoot. I mean, he can really, really move. And is he going to be now taking this step with Jimbo Fisher's offense, wherein it doesn't look like a team that just lost the guy that's been starting for 3.5 years, and they are able to take advantage of the fact that they have 11 of those 12 guys who caught a pass? Oh, by the way, you return a receiver who was out for the season. Oh, by the way, you return the number one tight end, Baylor Cup, who hasn't been able to play a game yet because of two season-ending injuries. A&M is this team that's just fascinating, and you've had such good staff retention, too, with Mike Elko, that I think that you look at that team and what they've been able to build, and now I am sipping the A&M Kool-Aid so much more than I was at this time last year, because we finally saw it. We finally saw them push some people around in this league and show that they belong. They've had nothing but top seven classes the last 3 years, and I think that's going to matter. I think A&M is just right on the cusp. For all we know, Jimbo Fisher is going to be the first coach to beat Nick Saban, and it won't be Kirby Smart, but that's a team that's ready and is ready to be able to sustain that top 10 success.
Last thing for you, who's the starting quarterback in Baton Rouge?
Miles Brennan. I'm going to stick with my guns and go Miles Brennan on that one. As much as everybody loves Max Johnson, understandably so, and what he and Kayshawn Boutte developed down the stretch last year was really, really fun to watch. I think people forget how good Miles Brennan was. I really do. I know he really struggled to pick up pressure in that first game, but those two games after that, I just thought he was tremendous. And I thought that he did some things that sort of get taken for granted because of how bad LSU's defense was. But people forget, guy had 11 touchdown passes and over 1,100 passing yards in three games. Then he gets hurt with the season-ending injury. But I think Coach O wants him to start. I think Coach O appreciates his role and what he was early on, wherein he was the first quarterback recruit to stay with him, committed after Coach O gets named the head coach there. I think there's a relationship there. We've seen Coach O build him up in the past. I think it ends up being a true battle in the fall camp, but I think Brennan wins out.
Outstanding stuff, Connor. We'll do it again soon, brother. Thank you.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, man.
All right. From Saturday Down South, down yonder in Orlando, it is our good buddy Connor O'Gara. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up on a Thursday from Harris Cherokee Casino Resort next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamJack.com.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
He's kind of a Swiss Army knife. He can play any spot. You know, I think, you know, he'll get a look at least two or three different places in the spring. I would think he would start out at center, where he's played the majority of his career. But I do think that he'll get a look at right tackle as well.
Drudy Arman, our man in Huntsville, 97.7 ESPN, talking about Chris Owens, Alabama offensive lineman. And I'm going to get this wrong. We're on in Tuscaloosa. I mean, we're on in a bunch of places in Alabama. There's Tide fans are going to go, you should know this. I should. I think he's a six-year guy. And I've looked that up before, but I just keep misplacing him because Chris Owens has – he's the guy that stepped in for Landon Dickerson last year at the end of the year. And very versatile, and he's old. And so there's a lot of value there. He's got that old man strong to him. So I appreciate Drew coming on. I always love catching up with him. There was a story I mentioned a little bit earlier today that I said I was going to get back to, and I'm going to do that right now. There has been an announcement out of New Orleans. I was reading this from the Associated Press. You can find it a thousand places. But the HBCU Legacy Bowl is going to be played next February in New Orleans. And you think, okay, yeah, I watched some of it. Maybe it was is it called the Southern Classic or the Crescent City Classic? Whatever, it's the Grambling and Southern in the Superdome. That's not there. This is going to be at Yulman Stadium at Tulane. And it's going to be the Black College Football Hall of Fame has established the HBCU Legacy Bowl. It's a postseason all-star game. It's going to showcase NFL draft-eligible players from historically black colleges and universities. There's a lot to like about this. There are some details that I would change. And the first one is when you're going to play it, because these kids understand. I didn't say it will showcase. This is the AP writing. Will showcase NFL draft prospects. They didn't say that. Said NFL draft eligible players. Well, once your high school graduating class is 3 years removed, you're draft eligible. All you have to do to get draft eligible is breathe for 3 years after you graduate high school. So I think that's the key here, because the truth is, there aren't that many draftable or draft prospect sort of players coming out of HBCUs now. And when I say not many, I mean like almost none at all. And that's 179 degrees away from what it used to be. But the issue here is when it's going to be played. You're going to take kids that aren't really at that level anyway of being a draft prospect, and you're going to give them some inactivity for, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and then say, hey, come audition for a job. I don't think that's setting them up for the most success, but it's a good effort. And like I said, it's something. But it's an all-star game, and it's a bunch of kids thrown together from different, obviously different programs, hadn't practiced together, done a lot of things. And in some cases, you hadn't practiced at all. Like, you turn your pads in either the beginning of December, end of November. Hey, come on back, play an all-star game. It's not the most likely way that the kids will be able to represent themselves. Doug Williams is part of it. James Harris. Do y'all know who James Harris is? He also played at Grambling, and he was a lot of first. He was a draft pick, black guy. He's a draft pick of the Bills back in 1969. I was 2 years old or 1 year old, depending, in 1969. And I know who James Harris is. I've talked to James Harris before. He was a lot of first as far as like a black quarterback in the NFL. James, you cannot conceptualize how controversial it was in 1969 for an NFL team to use a draft pick on a quarterback who was black. I am barely old enough, and I mean, I was like 8 or 9. He got traded to the Rams, and James Harris was having success, and this would have been like 75, 76. I mean, I was a little bitty kid, but I watched NFL. I mean, literally, from the time I was 5, I was like, all right, football. And so I knew James Harris. And he got hurt before the playoffs 1 year. I think it was 75, and his career was basically done after that. Went to the Chargers and played some, but just was never good again because I don't know if he was healthy. He said a lot of firsts. He was drafted. He started. He was the first black quarterback in NFL history to start week one. And he's behind this as well. And so when you get, you know, Shaq Harris, and he was also like the GM of the Jags for a while. He's been an executive in the NFL for a while. You get Shaq Harris and you get Doug Williams involved, there's a lot of credibility there. Like I said, move this thing up, I don't know, like a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever you can do. That's what I would do. All right, Dan Matthews is going to pop in here in a couple of minutes. But right now, I'm going to wrap it up with a closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
One emerging trend from the transfer portal is great news for certain teams, certain programs. It is very clear that players from, and I mean everybody from a redshirt freshman who, you know, I signed with Texas Tech and I didn't play, so I'm going to be a redshirt next year. Everybody from those guys to like fifth and even sixth-year seniors. When those players jump in the portal, most often what has emerged, they're heading home. At least, I mean, in a general sense, to their home state for their second stop in college. That means that all the kids leaving like Florida, Georgia, Texas, even California, as freshmen, true freshmen who are then in the portal, they're giving local schools that recruited them originally a second shot. That is great news for certain programs like Georgia, Florida, Texas, Southern Cal, etc. And honestly, Cal Berkeley and Georgia Southern and Alabama State. It's great news for those programs. The really interesting part is that second part I added. It's especially benefiting like the runner-ups, the little brothers, whatever, that the have fan in whatever state refers to them as. Clemson refers to South Carolina as little brother. Florida State doesn't even look at UCF, but if they did, they call him little brother. Everybody in the state of Texas looks at U of H and goes Cougar High. It's not just the monster programs benefiting, and that is a recruiting curveball. You're getting four-star and five-star kids going back to play for a Conference USA team because, well, they're in my home state, so FAU, here I come. That is my closing argument brought by the law offices of Alexander Shannara and Associates. Wherever it is you are in the Deep South, it can be Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, doesn't matter. If you need legal expertise, you need Alexander Shannara and Associates.
I'm really surprised that you knew that that was the nickname for University of Houston amongst some of the blue bloods within the Southwestern Conference. Yeah, it was. I remembered, a few years ago when University of Texas, you know, they came off their high horse and came down to Houston and played at Robertson Stadium. That's and, right. Of course, complained the entire time, yelling out Cougar High and all that, and U of H fans. It kind of tells you, which, by the way, you know that their sign is the kind of peace sign with the pinky finger at the end. They call it the Cougar Paw. Yes. Do you know what the middle finger is supposed to be for?
University of Texas.
That's it.
I thought that was Rice. Like everybody who's not a have in Texas hates the Longhorns.
Yeah, it was telling them that, yeah, get to step in. Hey, yeah, you know something that Clark Lee said yesterday? I know we got just a few seconds left on the show, but he said something, Chuck, that I think was probably the part that I'm like, wow, never really thought about it that way. We've never really had a chance to be developed. And it's a situation now where I think he looked at a program like Vanderbilt and said, huh, let's bring in the guys that can evaluate the talent, that can find us the steals, and then can bring these guys along because guess what? They haven't necessarily cared around here enough to do that. So it's time for us to do that. I like that. I like hearing that.
Takes a lot of follow-through. And like I said, he knows what it was before because he was there, played there. Absolutely. All right, wraps it up on a Thursday. Great news. Tomorrow, back live right here, Harris Cherokee Casino Resort in North Carolina. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Wraps it up on a Thursday.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.